You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports, the Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scarves. It is a wonderful Thursday evening here in Denver, Colorado. Joining me now out in Kansas City, Kansas, Daniel Sperry. How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing quite good. It's a good Thursday. We were supposed to record this a little bit earlier, but my dog, I came home from work and my dog was absolutely psycho. So it was one of those of like, we had to take him to the dog park or else we were not going to sleep tonight because he'd be nuts. Good evening at the dog park. Nice little walk. It's really nice outside compared to the hot. It felt like summer, like the last week. It just felt like June out here. And so it's been kind of miserable, but now it's kind of back to like I would normally expect out of spring. And it's a very good thing.
Absolutely, Dan. There's a little bit of a funny scenario you have earlier on in the season. It's still really, really cold in Colorado in the early parts. You know, the Rapids have had a couple warm-up and training days where, you know, they had to plow the practice field that had snow on it. But then we kind of get like mid to late May is always that point in which there's the debate amongst the training staff and everything of, do we want to move training from 11 a.m., which we pretty much had it to be. Otherwise, it was just going to be cold and dreary and possibly snowing earlier in the year, to move it to 10 a.m. just because then if it's a long training session that goes until 1 or 1:30, then pretty much everybody's baking there. So I think we're right on that flex there where, you know, maybe now I'm going to get 10 a.m. training instead of 11. But in any case, Dan, we're getting some news, albeit, you know, stuff that we're not going to deal with anytime in the near future. Listeners, if you haven't been paying attention, CONCACAF actually is kind of doing social media right this week in their announcements of all of the host cities and host venues for the 2019 Gold Cup. We've got a decent list right now, folks. As of recording, we have 11 of the 15 host cities throughout the United States. They are as follows: Banc of California Stadium in Los Angeles, California, the University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale, Arizona, Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia, Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina, Allianz Field, for those of you who don't remember that, it hasn't opened yet, and that will be the new Soccer Civic Stadium in St. Paul, Minnesota, home of Minnesota United FC, due to open next April. Obviously, it'll be ready by the time the summer happens. Toyota Stadium, home of FC Dallas in Frisco, Texas, First Energy Stadium in Cleveland, Ohio, Children's Mercy Park, where you are, Dan, home of Sporting KC, Sports Authority Field at Mile High in Denver, Colorado, home of the Broncos, BBVA Compass Stadium, and NRG Stadium, both in Houston, Texas. Dan, what did you make of the press conference that you had learning about what Sporting was doing with them hosting part of the Gold Cup? And overall, what do you think of this dynamic? And I'd say a list that has a good balance of big stadiums and the soccer-specific homes.
Yeah, I think it was encouraging. So there will be two games played at Children's Mercy Park. It's a doubleheader. That as much as we know. Of course, we don't know the opponents yet. I believe it has come out that U.S. Soccer will open in Minnesota at the brand new Allianz Field. I believe that was announced earlier in the week. So the Sporting KC staff and President and CEO Jake Reed said that he felt there was good optimism. He held some optimism that they could potentially land the men's national team for a game. I don't know what that means, and of course we don't know exactly what games each stadium's going to be hosting. But you know, Sporting Kansas City and Children's Mercy Park is no stranger to hosting the national team for friendlies, for World Cup qualifiers, for past Gold Cup matches. I believe it's been used in pretty much every Gold Cup since it was opened, except for the last one in 2017. That was the only one that it wasn't used in. So they've had games out here. It's been successful before. The new training center in Pinnacle makes a lot of this happen for Kansas City. They've got three full-size regular grass fields. They have two full-size turf fields and about six different locker rooms on that training facility there at Pinnacle. So there's plenty of space to house a lot of teams out here, which will potentially be four different national teams coming here. So that's a, it was a positive. It's also part of their chance to woo the World Cup committee. If the U.S. lands the 2026 bid, they're still one of the cities in the running to potentially to host games in there, and they're really looking to try and get themselves there and show that they could do it, most likely at Arrowhead Stadium, of course, but that at least the city, in terms of its infrastructure, can hold host and do a good job of creating a good atmosphere for international matches. I think that was the biggest takeaway from the press conference there, which is, I mean, if you're in Kansas City, you've been around Kansas City, you've been around the soccer culture out here, you know, that's pretty much a no-brainer that they'll be able to get out and support no matter who's here. One other announcement that they had, like 5 minutes, we walked outside, so we did a press conference, had the CONCACAF backdrop for the Gold Cup and all that stuff, and then we come back. They're like, all right, let's go do a photo op out on the field. We come back in, and they had completely changed it for the U.S. Women's National Team backdrop into the press conference room. And, you know, they were announcing that they're hosting the opening of the Tournament of Nations, which we'll talk about later. But, you know, the Women's National Team's coming out here this summer. Now you have the Gold Cup coming the summer after. We've hosted multiple cup finals out here in Kansas City. So it's a thing that for a small market, they're trying to market themselves for the larger scale potential World Cup bid for 2026 as a place to host matches. And just in general, this just kind of, it's one of those things that's it's a hallmark for a city and a market the size of Kansas City to be able to host and draw in the type of fans and create the type of atmosphere that it does for these tournament matches. So that, you know, the indications that we got from Jake Reed was that this is something that they want to continue to do within the Kansas City market. And, you know, they're going to push to try and host a Gold Cup game every single time. It's only been one Gold Cup without Kansas City since Children's Mercy Park was built. So I expect to see more of it in the future. But also not really surprising that CONCACAF ended up selecting Kansas City as a venue for the 2019 Gold Cup.
We don't have a complete list here, but at least of what we have, I really, really like it, Dan. The one thing that's, you know, really well known when it comes to the Gold Cup is it's the only real major tournament that CONCACAF has that no matter how they do it, if it's in the United States, it makes money. And I think that this balance, this list that we have so far is a good balance of just major city markets that people want to go to, and then also taking advantage of the various, you know, ethnic minorities that you have throughout the United States. You know, obviously Mexico plays anywhere from basically, you know, from California against the border all the way to Texas, they are going to fill out that venue. So whether it's them playing at NRG Stadium or, you know, potentially in Phoenix, Arizona, you know, or at Bank of California Stadium, that's obviously going to be appeal and they're going to be appealing. There's enough of another small markets out here. I learned that apparently there was a not so insignificant El Salvadorian population in Colorado a year ago now. When El Salvador played in the Gold Cup at Mile High Stadium. So, you know, that's really appealing from the existing markets that we have. Obviously, we know that Philadelphia has been a really good host for the knockout stage games and the finals in past, excuse me. And then I think I've long felt that, you know, a team being able to an MLS team or a market or a soccer city accomplishing something as far as their soccer civic stadium, they just award, whether it's U.S. friendly, you know, World Cup qualifier or something like that. And at least from the initials of what we've seen from everything that LAFC's done, certainly Bank of California Stadium, you know, is going to be, you know, has been excellent between them and, you know, what they have at the StubHub Center, that being, you know, a market that can accommodate all four of the teams that potentially will be playing there in one doubleheader, certainly deserving. Los Angeles is a major city market. That checks the box for me. And then, you know, say what you will about what Minnesota's been on the field standpoint, I think the outlines and the renderings we've seen from Allianz Field construction, I think they'll certainly be deserving. We only, as of recording, folks, we only have 11 of 15. So by the time you probably hear this, we'll probably get the other four. Dan, I would not be shocked at all if Audi Field was also on the list. So very deserving in terms of some emerging MLS markets from a venue and a stadium and an infrastructure standpoint, and then a good balance of some of your more traditional Gold Cup markets that are going to sell well, regardless of which Central or, you know, Caribbean national teams are playing there. Dan, moving on, the other big thing that we have coming into the 2019 Gold Cup is we're going to be under a new format. Folks, you might remember that it's normally groups A, B, and C, each with four teams. The top two automatically get in. And then if I'm remembering correctly, it was two of the three best thirds round out the top eight overall. Dan, we're now moving to a 16-team format. I'm assuming that it's going to mean four groups of four, top two can in, no more best fours or no more best thirds, excuse me. This is also bringing in some opportunities for some of these smaller teams. You know, typically this was the tournament of, you know, the best hexagonal teams, then maybe one or two random minnows, so to speak. Opening up, bringing in more teams, I think, is good as CONCACAF tries to get more teams, you know, more competent and competitive games as we're looking towards, you know, an expansion to a 48-team World Cup. What do you make of the new format? And are there any particular countries you're looking at who could really benefit from the expansion to then be a regular in this Gold Cup as opposed to, you know, once in a generation player-wise?
Well, I definitely think you're going to look at teams like, I mean, really, I feel like a team like El Salvador, that helps significantly because I think they've been so up and down in CONCACAF. It would make it to me it just makes sense that they're going to benefit from this. You're also going to see, I think you're going to see, because we're going from 12 to 16, you've got four more. So we're looking at Nicaragua, I think, could potentially benefit from this as we get a little bit more of the Central American countries in there, as well as some of the fringe island nations like St. Kitts and Nevis, who've been around for a while within CONCACAF. The Grenadines, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, that's the other one, right? That have been in the Gold Cup for a couple of years. They missed out, I think, last year, but that's been a couple of these Caribbean nations, the smaller ones, maybe potentially even a Cuba or a Puerto Rico. I know they haven't had the strongest national teams in the past, but I think it's going to benefit some of those fringe teams that we see pop up every now and then in the not in the hexagonal, but in the round prior to the hexagonal qualification. Some of the few that just kind of pop up every now and then, they kind of seem to rotate between each other, like a Cuba, like I said, like St. Vincent, like Bermuda, like those kinds of countries. I think you could definitely see that, and even Curacao, you could kind of see them potentially become a more prominent fixture within CONCACAF. My thing is, I mean, if you're going to go to 16 teams in the Gold Cup now, I feel like it would kind of make sense to begin expanding the latter rounds of the World Cup qualifying for CONCACAF, especially if more spots open up. Doing hexagonal, I think, doesn't sound it might be smart to add another group of four and add another two teams, make it eight in the later rounds. I think that could be something, eight and so whatever it is, but we have four and a fringe fifth. Now is the potential when the World Cup expands to 48. So I think that'll be, should be four complete and then a fringe and then a half spot, which would go to the fifth and a playoff type of a thing. So I think you're going to look at, as the tournament expands now, I think you're going to potentially, and along with the expansion of the World Cup format, I think now this could eventually start to lead to the expansion of the latter rounds of the qualifying phase. As more teams potentially qualify to the World Cup, you have more teams that are fixtures with the CONCACAF. But I think overall, look at the Euro tournament. I think expanding the Euros out to what they did from 16 to 24, I believe, or 16 to 24, or was it a little bit more than that?
I want to say it was 24.
And I think doing that, I think the Euros benefited from that greatly. You had a lot of really good storylines and a lot of really incredible knockout round matches there. I think the same thing is going to hold true for the Gold Cup. I think the format change is good. I think it's going to help out CONCACAF in the long run in building out a larger, because right now CONCACAF pretty much sits four to five teams strong, and really about 6 to 7 if we're going to talk in terms of consistency, even 6 to 8 if you throw in Canada and Jamaica, of teams that are just consistently bouncing around within that hexagonal range. And I think with the, as you, like I said, as you expand it out, I think more teams can potentially jump into the conversation as they continue to have better competition.
I agree, Dan. I think, you know, if you're Guatemala, if you're in El Salvador, if you're in Nicaragua with this expansion, you should be looking to be a regular, or, you know, you should be what, you know, we still don't have the full information on how the qualification for the expanded Gold Cup is going to work. We do know that the finalists for the hexagonal, so those final six in the previous World Cup qualifying cycle, automatically punched their ticket for those two Gold Cups. So of the 2019 Gold Cup, those six spots are already taken. So, you know, the US, Mexico, etc., they're already in there. But, you know, we're still finding out how the other systems work out. But, you know, if I'm Nicaragua, if I'm El Salvador, if I'm Canada, now that there's 16 spots, I should be a regular for it. The goal should be to make the Gold Cup. And if something hasn't happened, then something has gone horribly, horribly wrong. But I agree with you, Dan, that I think, you know, this is really going to open up opportunities for maybe one or two of those island nations. I think it's the not the African Cup of Nations. What am I thinking? I can't remember the acronym, but there's a separate tournament that they do for the Caribbean teams that was previously a qualification for one or two spots in the Gold Cup. Now I think that tournament becomes a bigger deal to a Haiti, for example, or a Dominican Republic or one of those other island nations. So I think for Central and South, for the Central American teams, this is your opportunity to, I think, really step it up in terms of being a regular and a nation that overall CONCACAF has to think about, not just, you know, Mexico and, you know, the United States having to think, oh, is it going to be Jamaica this time or is it going to be Guatemala this time, so to speak? And I think for the you know, for the island nations, I think this is an opportunity to really have something that's relevant, you know, beyond just, you know, playing friendlies. We've seen in past iterations of World Cup cycles that some of those smaller island nations in the Caribbean, they are eliminated in the same month that the, so there's the World Cup final. And then the next international window is the starts of the knockout rounds for some of those smaller countries for then going to whatever the next round proper is, you know, before the hexagonal and the round before that. And so in that next international window immediately following the World Cup, there are countries that are already out. So you're talking less than 3 months from one World Cup ending. Some of those countries have already been eliminated from the next World Cup cycle. And then at that point, the only thing you have to look forward to are other friendlies where you're playing superior competition and not actually doing anything to develop your team. So I think the restructuring CONCACAF and the restructuring of how you qualify for the Gold Cup, with the Gold Cup expanding and how World Cup qualification is going to change, Dan, I agree with you, we should probably move away from the hexagonal in that round and probably just the second round, I think is only going to be better for all these countries and I think make things even a little bit more interesting and have more games and thus more exercises for even some of the bigger countries. Moving on, Dan, this is something that I've kind of heard from a couple of other people, granted, most of whom have passports other than the United States, I will say, who have dabbled with the thought of, you know, what if we had Mexico host a Gold Cup? Or what if we had like Panama and Costa Rica and another Central American country in there host a Gold Cup, so to speak? Is that anything we should even be thinking about? Or, you know, should we still at least in the immediate future, you know, be operating on the assumption that the U.S. has the infrastructure, everybody knows it, it makes money, it should stay in the continental U.S.?
I think until another country proves that they can host it and make money, then it should stay in the U.S. Because I'm going to take that from the CONCACAF standpoint, because I think that's what CONCACAF is honestly looking at. Because I think Mexico has the infrastructure to do it. I think Canada has the infrastructure to hold it. But you know, they're not hosting games. So I think, you know, I would love to see a Canadian Gold Cup. I would love to see a Mexican Gold Cup. I think it would be really cool. But until one of those other markets, I don't think any other team in CONCACAF has the full infrastructure and setup and can guarantee safety of players and all that stuff. I'm not sure if another country has that. So outside of those three. So I think if I'm CONCACAF, I'm going to continually put it in a place that, one, is good for the game. Which means good fields, good stadiums. It looks aesthetically, it's pleasing on TV. That's, you know, there's only about three countries you can offer that in more than four or five venues, and that's Canada, US, Mexico. So until that changes, I don't see it ever leaving the US, and really, or at least that I could see it leaving the US for Canada or Mexico. I could not see it leaving for anyone outside of those three, though.
I agree with you, Dan. I think that's something that we should be working towards, or at the very least thinking about. Obviously, there's a number of safety issues and complexities associated with some of the Central American countries. And in a lot of cases, just from an infrastructure standpoint, you know, if Panama had to host a Gold Cup tomorrow, they've got, you know, two stadiums that from an infrastructure standpoint, from a media standpoint, from a quality of the field and size of the venue, they could possibly do it. And, you know, you don't want to host an entire, you know, you would never have a World Cup, you know, where everything is being held all on one stadium, just logistically, like even before the field goes out, just like how much cycling you'd have to go through in that venue would be completely impractical. You know, if we got to a point where, you know, Panama had two or three stadiums that could realistically do it, you know, and then you throw in Costa Rica there, maybe one other country, maybe, you know, that said, I would say, you know, if we're looking at, say, the 2021 Gold Cup, or if we get that far, a 2023 Gold Cup. I know the CONCACAF has dabbled with making it a once every 4 years tournament to maybe open up some of the opportunities for a Copa America Centenario or something else for some of the other countries in CONCACAF. You know, if it was 2021, you know, Canada said, you know, hey, we're starting the Canadian Premier League. We're going to have, you know, two or three other soccer-specific venues. We have modular capacities at some of the Canadian Football League venues in order to make them work for soccer. We can make it work with the scheduling and grass on there, then I would totally be open to a 2021 or a 2023 Gold Cup in Canada. You know, have two groups, you know, have eight to have half of the teams have their group stage in the western part, you know, the BC places, wherever the Edmonton Eskimos and whatever Calgary venue you would have there, have the others, you know, the eastern MLS teams, maybe the Ottawa Fury Stadium as well, and then have them come together, you know, put a semifinal in Toronto, a semifinal at Stade Saputo in Montreal, and then the Olympic Stadium host the final. I'd be totally open to that, but I agree with you that I think certainly for the immediate future, it has to be held in the U.S. I do think we're getting to a point where Canada could potentially do it, and I think we should. I think CONCACAF should be having some of the other smaller nations, even in a joint like three or four bid possibly, should be striving towards having that capacity from an infrastructure standpoint for their own league and for the sake of their own national team and other prospects as well. Moving on, Dan, we are starting to get the finalization of all of the, at least the preliminary rosters for the 2018 World Cup in Russia. Unfortunately, folks, as you probably know by now, the U.S. national team will not be participating. But, Dan, we have over half of the preliminary rosters for all of the other teams that will be participating. And we have a number of MLSers who will be representing the league and their individual clubs in Russia. They are as follows. Christian Martinez from Columbus Crew will be there with Panama. Also with Panama will be Adolfo Machado of the Houston Dynamo. There's a bunch of players from LAFC. Steven Betisher from Iran. Omar Gaber from Egypt, formerly who played with Bob Bradley on the Egyptian national team. Marco Urrea is on the 23-man roster despite his cheekbone facial injury with Costa Rica. And then, of course, Carlos Vela with El Tri from the LA Galaxy. The Dos Santos brothers as well somehow are on that roster despite still being hurt. Minnesota United's Francisco Calvo, who hasn't had a good couple of weeks, will be there with the Ticos as well. Also with them from New York City FC, Ronald Matarita and Rodney Wallace. With Panama, we have Fidel Escobar and Michael Murillo from New York Red Bulls. Two players from Orlando City SC, Amro Tarek from Egypt, and Yoshi Otun will be there with Peru. From Portland Timbers, Costa Rica's David Guzman will be attending, as well as Andy Polo from Peru. From your San Jose Earthquakes, now we have two Panamanians, Harold Cummings, and of course, Anibal Godoy. Seattle Sounders have three players. Nico Lodero from Uruguay, Gustav Svensson will be there with Sweden. Nozlatan for Sweden, of course. Roman Torres will be with Panama. And last but certainly not least, Kendall Waskin will be with Costa Rica from Vancouver Whitecaps. And just to throw it in there, folks, Johnny Russell was given a call for a upcoming Scottish friendly period with the Scottish national team of Sporting Kansas City. Dan, what do you make of this overall roster, the diversity of MLS players from all over the world in the league and going to Russia? And who do you think could potentially stand out individually or collectively?
Well, I mean, it is kind of, I will say this, because Johnny, Scotland isn't going to the World Cup. So it is kind of sad. It would have been cool to see Johnny Russell and the Scottish national team at the World Cup, but I think they choked at the end of their qualification, so kind of like Wales. So would have been cool, but it is good to see him get a call up, as he will. I'll take the quick Sporting Kansas City side of this, and the runs is run pretty much everywhere else. It's cool to see him get called up. He's going to be playing against Mexico. He'll have a big stage. So that for the Scottish national team, as they do the they'll be in the States doing some pre World Cup tune-ups for a couple of World Cup teams. So that's cool. If we're really looking at this, I am excited to see as many players as there are for Panama. I mean, Panama is going to be like go MLS. I feel like it's going to be a lot of fun. They've got a lot of their good players are in MLS and do well in MLS. We'll see how they do, man. They're a minnow in this tournament, but I'm really looking forward to them. Looking forward to seeing. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Peruvian national team at least had Yoshimaru Otun from Orlando City on it, right?
Yes, Yoshi Otun will be with Peru.
And did they have Gordy Reyna as well?
Did they? I have not seen him on the list, and did the list a 24-man roster, so I think he is out for Russia, unfortunately.
So, but I mean, like, I like watching Yotun play in MLS. I think he's good. I like the role that he's been playing with Peru. I've loved watching Peru recently overall anyways. So they're going to be a dark horse for me. I'm excited to see Carlos Vela with the Mexican national team. When he's going and playing, if he's playing at the level that he has been in MLS for the Mexican national team, he's going to be really, really fun to watch. There's a few others overall, though, but like, I mean, there's a good MLS contingent. It's a lot less than it would have been if the U.S. national team had been there, but I think there's plenty to root for. We'll see if Steven Betashore makes the full squad, because I think the squad that was released for Iran was a full 30 players, and he hasn't appeared for Iran since a friendly back in like 2015 or something like that. So it's been quite a while. It was just after the 2014 World Cup. Since his last appearance with them. So we'll see what happens there. But overall, I'm quite excited for this tournament. And I think that there's a pretty good contingent of MLS representatives headed over to Russia for this for the World Cup.
Absolutely, Dan. Just to confirm with you, as of May 13th, Iran has a 35-man preliminary roster for the World Cup. So Betashore, not a lock yet. Mexico came out with their 28-man roster, folks. So unless, you know, it's the four MLSers that they called in, there will be, you know, getting cut from those last five spots. Mexico's for sure. I think Carlos Vela is virtually a lock unless, you know, something happens to him injury-wise. And then Panama's roster is a 35-man roster. So they've got enough MLSers to where I think at least a couple of them are going to be in there and be major players for them, but not sure that all of them are going to make it, Dan. I'm enamored with how diverse MLS has really become. I felt that in 2014, but you're really seeing them sort of stretch across all the continents. You know, we've got a number of Australians. You know, I think, you know, a World Cup cycle or two ago, it was a lot of people, you know, it was a lot of players from North America, from Central America, sprinkling the central of South Americans. And then, you know, the various European stars, most of whom had retired or weren't going to be considered from their national team. But, you know, now I'm just looking over, you know, I think other than Asia, if I'm not mistaken, I think they have every single other continent represented. I was always confused geographically about whether or not the Middle East, you know, was part of which one of the other continents. But so I'm amazed with the diversity. I'm amazed with the CONCACAF representation that MLS now has. I agree with you, Dan, that I think if there is a go MLS team in Russia, it's probably Panama, just with the number of players and the number of different MLS teams that are represented. I don't know that I see Panama getting out of the group stage, but at the very least, you know, it's a good exercise for a guy like Anibal Godoy and a few other players to be on a national stage. In terms of, I think, individual players or teams that are going to be infected, just because I think they're the teams being represented that have the best chance of advancing through, it's probably going to be Costa Rica and Mexico. I think Mexico will have another fifth game curse, so to speak, and I would expect Costa Rica to build on what they did in Brazil and at least get out of the group stages. So I think those teams will be a little bit affected a little bit longer. Folks, for those of you looking at the schedule, MLS will pause play for the group stages, but then they'll be back before the knockout. So depending on how travel goes and teams getting eliminated, you could see players that make it out of the group stage trickling in later, depending on the scheduling and obviously travel as they're coming from halfway around the world. But I think if there's an individual player who will probably miss the longest period of time, Dan, excuse me. I'd have to say it's probably Nico Lodero. Hasn't really played a whole lot with Uruguay, but just I think Uruguay is probably the best team that's represented. I don't think Mexico is going to make it past that fifth team, as I just said, though I don't know that Nico Lodero is going to be playing a whole lot and however far Uruguay makes it. That said, I think the Sounders probably have so many bigger problems that losing Nico Lodero, I don't think is going to be, that's not going to make the difference in terms of making it or breaking it for them. Dan, any other thoughts you have about the overall World Cup roster? And, you know, how do you think this could overall impact MLS's status in world football?
The last World Cup helped affect MLS status for the positive. I think that you're looking at this one. I think there's a very good chance that it can again, with Costa Rica featuring a lot of them. They're very good. Some potential key playmakers for the Mexican national team, are MLS guys. So if Mexico makes it deep, then there's that. Panama comes out, how's it going to show it? Sorry, excuse me for that, for the yawn. But, you know, if Panama comes out and has a good showing and puts up a good fight in the group and gives England a run for their money and does that kind of stuff, MLS is going to start getting a lot of credit because that team is made up virtually of all MLS players. So, you know, this is huge for MLS. And I'm not asking for Panama necessarily to make it out of the group. I just want them to give a good showing and give a good account of themselves. And if they make it out of the group, awesome. It's even better. I think for all of MLS, I think just good showings from those players you'll see the value of a lot of these go up, and it could potentially make itself a more attractive option for fringe players elsewhere that are looking to make it in. And, you know, they may not be in the World Cup with their national teams, or they are at the fringe of their thing with the national teams and they're not getting consistent playing time with their club, and they sit there and they see this guy who's having success at MLS and comes in and steps in on the world stage and does great, sits there and says, hey, I could go get time at this MLS team, most likely. I think it's going to benefit MLS a lot. So a good showing always benefits MLS from teams that have MLS players, and especially good showings from those players as well as it does some of the ones that are making their career and potentially posturing themselves for a move to catapult themselves from MLS to another league with a good World Cup performance, and to, you know, cash in on a bigger paycheck and a higher profile club and more higher profile playing time. So I genuinely believe there's a lot of players that are in that boat that are in the MLS contingent there, and that happening as well shines a good light back on MLS. This is how it'll impact it. If you're looking at teams that I think will benefit the most out of it, I mean, I immediately look at Atlanta United and I look at Sporting Kansas City. They're both teams atop either conference, and I don't think either of those teams have a player that's going to the World Cup. That's
not big. One.
Not one on either team. And Johnny Russell will potentially miss maybe one game in his time out with Scotland. Both teams are deep, and they were built to withstand stuff happening this summer, and having potentially losing players, and they have the depth to do it. But, you know, you look at some of these teams that are in the right position that don't have players going to the World Cup, and that's a pretty good thing for them going forward. And if I remember right, a lot of teams that had players that left for the World Cup and they came back, they missed out on it a little bit. It took a little bit of time for the wheel to click and turn again. Back in 2014, I know the Earthquakes were starting to get hot in 2014, and then Juan Dolowski and a couple other guys left for the World Cup, and all of a sudden, you know, it comes back, and it was by the time Juan Dolowski picked it up again, after finally getting back assimilated to the team, they were well out of earshot for a playoff spot. To keep these teams through, and while they're not going to miss a whole lot of games, I don't think, I still think just for the rhythm of those teams, it'll be beneficial For the ones who I think it'll, in terms of MLS teams who will come out doing well out of this, is those who don't have players going to go play in the World Cup, which is a sad thing for those teams, because I still think it's a big honor to have players go to play. But at the same time, I think it benefits teams, especially like Sporting Kansas City and Atlanta, greatly.
I agree with you, Dan. I think we've seen in the past, both, you know, whether it was 2010 or 2014, you know, especially those players that have a really grueling World Cup. You know, speaking of Sporting, I was thinking, you know, Matt Beisler and Graham Zusa, you know, had really draining experience, good but draining experiences in Brazil, and everything that, you know, how that they just basically ran out of gas for the playoffs. So, you know, if Egypt makes a run, or if Carlos Vela, you know, is playing 90 minutes, maybe 120 minutes, a knockout round game, or, you know, comes up with an injury or something, you know, is he going to be gassed by the time, you know, we get to October and November for LAFC? So I think that's also going to be impactful. We'll end the segment on this, folks. There are a couple of teams that have not listed their initial preliminary rosters. Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Spain, France, Serbia, Switzerland, Belgium, Japan, and Senegal. Overall, those countries aren't really going to affect any MLS teams. I'm assuming David Villa, at his age, isn't really on the radar for Spain at all. And the only other big player that's in there with any of the countries that is truly going to affect the team starting 11, I think, would be Laurent Simon with Belgium. And I'm not even sure that he'd be a lock to make the roster. And I don't know how much he would be playing for Belgium, just given how much the Golden Generation in Europe has been playing really, really well, and the goals that they have to try and do something in this World Cup. So, you know, LAFC might lose from a time standpoint and a number of games standpoint, might lose Laurent Simon. I don't know that Laurent Simon is going to be drained in the same way that some of these Panamanians who are locks for the 18, or certainly some of the Mexican or the Costa Rican players. That does it for us in this segment, folks. We'll be back with Roundtable doing rapid fire, weekend pin gums, and much more. We'll be right back. Welcome back, listeners, to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com. Powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scarves. It is time for the roundtable. So, Dan, we're recording this on Thursday, May 17th, one night after the San Jose Earthquakes got a 2-2 draw against Vancouver Whitecaps, proving that the Quakes can get results against somebody besides Minnesota United. We have been hesitant in the past, recently, folks, to talk about midweek action. So, Dan, what was your take on this game? And, you know, two teams that I think are still trying to figure themselves out in the Western Conference.
This is the best. It sounds funny because I watching the Minnesota, they beat Minnesota United 3-1 on Saturday. The Earthquakes get their second win of the season, but this is easily the best 90-minute performance by the Earthquakes, I think. The two goals that they gave, in my opinion, I think that was the best 90-minute performance that they've put out all year long. That's pretty how trashy they've been. You know, they came out with a 5-4-1, very different formation. They played it very well. I kind of acted more as a four. I was trying to draw it up earlier, and it acted more as a 4-1-2-1. It was more like two? A four, kind of. So, because you had, so the way they had it, they had Florian Youngworth, but he eventually provided cover and even kind of boosted into the attack as a distributor, with the wing backs going forward in Shea Salinas and Nick Lima. But when it became defensive time, he slotted in as a third center back. So he kind of played more of a stopper role in front of Cummings and Affelter. And so there, so that was that with the back five. And then you had Godoy and Uwil, both pitching up into the attack. You had Vaco playing centrally, kind of pinching it wide centrally, and you had Magnus Eriksson and Danny Huizen up there. I'm trying to think, did I forget anybody? No. So yeah, and the wingbacks provided a lot more of the width. So it was more or less it was like a 5-2-3 in a way, but with Florian Youngworth almost acting as a defensive mid at times. It was an interesting formation and setup that they had, but I thought it worked really well. Nick Lima scored an amazing goal with his left foot. Danny Huizen could potentially have been called offsides, but it wasn't clear and obvious. The angle was terrible to look at it. So that was the two Earthquakes goals. The other ones was Jordi Reyna. I believe Jordi Reyna twice. The first one was Christian Tcharik at the opener, and it was Jordi Reyna who set him up. The San Jose have had left back issues, which has caused a lot of the positioning of the back line and the center backs, as sometimes they get overextended. Same thing happened on both goals. They get overextended, miss their man markings. The other one was Jordi Reyna hit a header that deflected off of Shea Salinas back and into the goal. The header probably would have gone right at Andrew Tarbell, which would have won the game for the Earthquakes if they had not. Andrew Tarbell made his best performance of the year, making 7 saves, and he certainly stepped up as a shot stopper. Both teams that were kind of in desperate need of 3 points came away with a draw that they could both sit there and say, you know what, that was a fair result. I thought we played well. Walk away from it and move on. The Earthquakes, if they can get rid of their individual mistakes, they probably would have won the last 2 games by an aggregate score of 5-0. All 3 goals came on just simple, stupid mistakes. But for the overall structure of the Earthquakes, I've definitely seen an improvement, which is a good thing. Vancouver, still, I don't know what I'm getting with them every single time they go out. They're badly misusing Charlie Davies. Not Charlie Davies, goodness. Alfonso Davies.
Kai Kamara? Alfonso Davies.
No. I actually thought they did a good job of utilizing Kai Kamara this weekend and running him into the channels with through balls and stuff like that, and kind of utilizing the pace and his playmaking ability, which is something that's kind of unheralded about him. But he used to be a winger, so, you know, throwing him up there as a target forward all the time worked great for Columbus Crew, but that seems to work great in their system, period. Interesting game. I really thought San Jose played a lot better. They looked better in attack. They had a majority of the possession. They looked good. I think that's good for them moving forward. If they don't take points from DC United on Sunday or on Saturday this weekend, we'll get into that game later. But I think they're gonna that'd be a huge step back, especially from what I saw from them last night.
Absolutely, Dan. Moving on, folks, we have some news not only about the Tournament of Nations, featuring the U.S. Women's National Team. Of course, there will be 4 teams participating in that. The U.S. will be involved, as well as Brazil, Japan, and Australia, kind of running the gambit as far as the major women's national team programs outside of Canada are concerned. And then we finally have dates and locations for that. They'll begin on July 26th, and the tournament will run through August 2nd. It will start in Kansas City, Kansas, at Children's Mercy Park. They'll move to Pratt and Whitney Stadium in East Hartford, Connecticut, which I believe is the renamed stadium, home of the UConn Huskies football team. And then they'll finish off at Toyota Park, home of Chicago Fire in Bridgeview, Illinois. I think 3 solid, you know, mid-sized markets. You know, I think Connecticut has been a good option for the U.S. national team in the past, other than the parking situation on the campus of the University of Connecticut. Fortunately, this will be in the summer, so I'm assuming not a whole lot of student parking, and because it's not during the semester to deal with. Obviously, the other 2 pretty solid MLS venues. I think, you know, a solid exercise for the U.S. women's national team and 3 other really good countries. So really excited for that. You know, for those of you who, you know, leave, you know, have the World Cup and it's still kind of having that taste in your mouth of wanting some level of international soccer, whether this is on TV or you are in, you know, the Kansas City area, you know, the Northeast, or, you know, in the Midwest in Chicago, really good options on TV and some really good teams that have given the U.S. a run for the money at times. You know, Japan obviously being a big old rival, and Australia and Brazil certainly to women's national team programs that are on the up and up. I'm very excited about it. Don't know about you, Dan. But moving on, Dan, we rarely talk politics, and we don't talk as much money outside of the actual operations of MLS and soccer in America. But we've got something to talk about. Listeners, for those of you not clued into the politics side in the U.S., the Supreme Court reversed a longstanding deal as far as states' rights when it comes to sports gambling, other than it being outside the state of Nevada and obviously in Las Vegas, Nevada. And now each individual state will have an opportunity to make their own rules as far as professional and college sports betting. This was put out, I believe, by the state of New Jersey initially. So they'll be moving forward. A couple of other states still kind of scrambling. Dan, what can you tell us as far as what some of the other national leagues and collegiate sports have reacted? And how do you see this impacting MLS on a financial level, or just, you know, us being able to bet on the Cali Classico now?
Yeah, that could be fun. I mean, you technically could, but it's all under the table and borderline illegal. But, you know, so from an MLS standpoint, we'll take it this. I've yet to hear anything from college leagues or any of the college out of it. I haven't seen if the NCAA had a press release about it. But I am very excited. I'm excited about this because I think it's a good thing. And I think for the most part, every other major league outside of the NBA has had a good take on this or has had a bad take on this. I'm not a fan of the NFL and the MLB's clutching of the pearls on this, especially with how NFL then turns around and asks for a 20% cut of the profits on it. That doesn't make sense. MLB has asked for a significant cut of the promise on it. But for that to happen, then it'd have to go to a federal level. And if we were going to talk politics on this, I believe the federal government has no intent on going crazy in terms of regulating this, which means that it's going to be left for the most part up to the states, which means that there would be no way that the NFL could actually try and cut in a profit and make a deal with all of those states. Same with MLB. They could, but it would be painstaking and go through a whole lot of court battles and fees and stuff that nobody wants to go through. So from an owner's standpoint, if you're the owner of any franchise in any major league of sports, you should be happy about this because, you know, this is going to get people interested in your team, interested in your sport, and it's going to give them something else to get involved with your sport. And right now, you know, the radio host out here named Kevin Keatsman, who notoriously bags on soccer. So I think he's kind of a bit of a loser in that way. But his take on it has been very good about, you know, the Royals should sit there and say, man, this is great because our team sucks right now. But if I can get someone into the stadium and on their phone, they're placing $5 prop bets on whether or not they're going to score a run this inning, or, you know, people placing larger bets on that and cutting a profit off of that. Because that will the teams themselves might get a bit of a profit off of it. Even then, the interest in their teams is going to skyrocket. And MLS so far has been the only one to take that approach. Go find the league's statement on it. They were very embracing of this. This happens in every other major country in Europe. In every other major soccer country, there are bets, there's prop bets, and all of that. And quote unquote, the worry of the integrity of the sport really doesn't matter for them. And they're fine with it. And they believe that the integrity of the sport will hold true. And, you know, cheaters are going to cheat no matter what. People are going to try and do that no matter what their rules or regulations. So MLS has taken that stance on it. And Don Garber was actually here touring Pinnacle on Tuesday. And reporters got a chance to talk with him. We talked with him about 20 minutes. He answered a couple of questions on the sports betting thing. And, you know, outside of the official statement, gave his, I think it was his first chance to actually talk about it. And he was, double down on the league statement. And he's very excited about that. He's excited to see what happens with it at the state levels. But the early impression of it is that it is a good thing, and that they're more than open to it, and that the league itself sees that as a chance for them to grab eyeballs. And like I said, so far, this is one of the only major sports leagues that I've seen that actually has came out and said they'd embrace it. The NBA was actually lobbying against this bill and against the Supreme Court decision the whole time. While at the same time putting out statements that, you know what, we'll be ready for it if it happens. They didn't want it to happen, but they're going to prepare themselves for it to happen anyways. Less hypocritical, but at the same time, never really saying they'd be on it. But I think MLS has done a good job. The stance that MLS has would be my personal stance on this. I really don't care about it either way. If it's going to happen, cool. It's going to bring more eyeballs to MLS. And I think that's a good thing in the long run. And if they can figure out a way for that to happen, and way to work around, way to use the sports betting scene, to generate more eyeballs, and more interest in the game, maybe in stadium, maybe, whether it's at the bars on away matches or anything like that. I think that it's a good thing for MLS standpoint. And so far, that's been what's come out of the mouth of the league officials on this.
I agree, Dan. You know, I think, you know, whether it's, you know, I remember watching when I was over in England with my family for, I know we were watching international friendlies. They had commercials in the middle of games showing live updates on scoring. There are other countries that have Hamley on this. It doesn't seem to be a rampant cheating problem, and they have update. There are updates in terms of betting options at halftime based on where the score is for you. That it's a big part, and it gets people engaged. Obviously, I agree with you. There are cheaters. There are elements of, gambling as I borderline call it a sickness that I do think we need to look into that, obviously everything from Vegas, that was designed by psychologists. The whole goal was to get you to spend more money. So I do think that is something that the leagues need to be a little bit precautious about, that the states need to look into and, adopt programs to help with, gambling addictions or whatever the right psychology terminology is for that. But, other than that, I'll admit I'm the stereotypical guy at the Super Bowl party who's walking around with a roll of $21 bills, making prop bets on how long the national anthem's going to take, what color is the halftime performer going to initially be wearing, stuff like that. So I think this is super fun, whether it's, turning, not necessarily MLS fantasy, the game through MLS soccer, turning that fantasy into some form of betting or, betting on individual players or something, or, even I'm the crazy guy who's going to bet on, who gets a yellow card, not necessarily who's going to win or what the versus are. I'll admit I'm not as familiar at betting when it comes to covering the spread, just because soccer, it's so fewer goals as opposed to, looking at the NFL games, for example, that are usually the home team by 3 points or something like that. So I think this is a way for MLS and leagues in general to get people a little bit more interested. As you mentioned, with the Royals getting people involved and more interested in the game, I think it's a way to engage people, whether it's with the apps or however you want to. I do think that each, it is going to vary on by state. So obviously I think that's going to make it highly variable. Whereas, Vegas has obviously figured that out. Should the USL look into this with Las Vegas Lights FC in particular? I do think the states need to go about it in a careful way, but I think if they do get it right, or if it's just everybody calls Nevada and it's like, hey, how have you been making this work for the last couple of decades, if they preach that approach, then I think it's going to work in New Jersey, it's going to work everywhere else. It'd work in Colorado here with people placing bets on the Rapids. It would work in Kansas and Missouri with people making bets on Sporting KC. Moving on, last rapid fire we have here, folks. There was a little bit of a funny bugaboo on Instagram earlier today with Jermaine Jones posting, I believe on his storyline on Instagram, a photo, a backdrop of Children's Mercy Park, and then in big white capital letters, "New Chapter?" question mark. And basically Twitter completely freaked out, Dan, because everybody thought, oh crap, has Sporting Kansas City signed Jermaine Jones to a player contract? Turns out he was just there at the training facility to get his coaching B license, folks. But in any case, Jermaine Jones having a little bit of fun with, trolling people on the internet and getting everybody to freak out. That said, now that we have it confirmed, Jermaine Jones getting his coaching B license, that is one level below the pro license, previously known as the A license, folks, out there in Kansas City at the new
plot
training.
Twist. They're signing him as their DP striker. I can't even keep a straight face as I try and say that. Jermaine Jones, Sporting Kansas City DP striker.
Oh God. But so in any case, Jermaine Jones, regardless of what you thought about him as a player, with the national team and with MLS burning out, essentially three different MLS locker rooms over the course of 3 years. He is a master of Instagram and of social media and leaving people hanging. So, props to you, Jermaine. Not sure how I feel about him potentially being a coach, Dan. He definitely has the feel generally standpoint, but, just from him being a clashing personality, I was saying this, when we were off air, saying that he's almost like a Preki type, where he's going to be a real curmudgeon with the media. He's going to do some interesting and crazy and unpredictable stuff tactically. I'm not sure that he's going to be a good coach, but there's an alternate reality where he's like on Hard Knocks or some other, HBO special of him on the coaching side. And I want to watch every single minute of that TV program. So really curious to see what happens. Does Jermaine Jones potentially go back to Germany and start coaching? Is he looking at opportunities to maybe coach in USL, for example? Is he going to become an assistant coach? Is he going to end up on the sidelines in MLS doing crazy Jermaine Jones things that make people love him and make people hate him? I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm really excited to see where this goes. Moving on, Dan, we are off to Pick'ems, and we are going to start on Saturday on Big Fox, Bart Simpson Fox, Portland Timbers hosting Los Angeles FC. Portland Timbers that figured things out. They just got a big win in their rivalry game over the weekend against Seattle Sounders. Then LAFC, I think, playing well, but maybe not getting some of the results they've wanted in their new stadium. Dan, what do you see from this game, and who you got?
I'm going to go with Portland Timbers, the hot hand, man. They're weirdly getting it done in a very non-attractive way. That game against Seattle was a complete bore until the goal. But this LAFC team has been interesting to me as well. I liked their performance against New York City FC. That was a heck of a game between those two, and that was a lot of fun to watch. But you know, this is a Portland Timbers team that beat New York City FC. They're on the road. This is Portland's, but was this four matches in a row or five? Four of their last five matches for the Timbers, I believe, have been at home. This is home, a Saturday afternoon, in the heat on the turf in Portland. Although I don't think it's that hot in Portland right now. Still a sunny afternoon game on the turf always makes for a nice lethargic showing from the road team. I'm going to go with Portland on this one. It's home. They're in MLS. It's kind of how it goes. I'll go 2-1 on this to the Timbers.
I'm going to agree with you, Dan. I think this is right for the Portland Timbers to take. I'm just pulling up the article now. Again, I do not believe the Portland Timbers have any players as of right now listed on World Cup rosters. They have two, David Guzman and Andy Polo. I'm going to say neither of those two are particularly big players or significant players. You know, no Diego Valeri, no Fernando Adi getting called up for any World Cup qualifier or World Cup rosters or anything. On the other side, LAFC have four, and they're all four pretty significant pieces in Vela, Urania, Gaber, and Betasher. I'm pretty sure this is the last game. I think it's Monday. Teams have to make their players available for their national team. So I'm pretty darn sure, you know, none of those four players are going to want to have this game be a game they pull up with an injury or even get the slightest knock. Plus, LAFC, you know, has had some dynamic attack, but is still had some weaknesses defensively going on the field. I believe this will be their first turf game since coming into MLS. No, they did play at Seattle to open up their season. But in any case, I just think this is the Diego Valeri show. I think Portland Timbers are going to be locked in. I think LAFC, you know, has been struggling enough to where they're going to give up opportunities for Valeri and others to end up scoring. And some of the key players for LAFC are very much going to have their minds and elsewhere and are going to be very cautious not to pull a hamstring or do anything else that could potentially cost them in the last game they'll play before heading off with their national teams. Moving on, this is a later game. This is not a nationally televised game, Dan, but this is one that both intrigued us because it's two teams who have had something to prove and so far have been proving it. We're kind of curious to see, you know, is this an indication of one being the better than the other and potentially them staking their claim as far as being a playoff team in the Eastern Conference. It is New England Revolution hosting Columbus Crew SC, both coming off big wins. This will be at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on Saturday on ESPN Plus and whatever local TV options you have in Ohio and in Massachusetts, respectively. Dan, who you got and why?
I am going to go with a draw in this one. I think Columbus have been playing really well recently, but and New England had a pretty bad week outside of their result against Toronto. I would go with the Crew. Normally I would go with the Crew in this, but I think this is New England have been really good at home this year. They're playing on turf. Crew is not used to playing on turf. Haven't showed well on turf at the times that they have. So I'm going to go with a draw in this one, just because I feel like that'll even out. Both teams have good and bad things going for them. I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw in this. Pena's been on fire. He's got a goal or an assist in every single game so far, or leaving every single game he's played for the Revolution so far. So Pena's been fun. Four goals, four assists. Check him out. And then Justin Zardes will go Pena and Zardes as the two goal scorers in this matchup.
I'm going to agree with you, Dan. I'm going to say a 1-1 draw. I think both teams have been playing pretty well, but they've also gotten lucky. You know, New England's been a scrappy team, and they've kind of gutted it out at home. You know, if Sebastian Giovinco doesn't get that pretty dumb red card, then I think Toronto maybe gets something out of that game. Then we don't need to talk about, you know, Roger Espinosa's back pass that, you know, got New England pretty lucky. And then the other side, you know, Columbus has been a really good home team. Granted, they've done it against not the best opposition, but they haven't been so good on the road. I still think both of these teams have serious question marks about them, and I think it's without a whole lot of answers here. I think Diego Fezundes creates something on Columbus's back line, and then I'm going to say Federico Higuain tallies something as well, and I think we'll end up with a 1-1 draw, and I think a fair result as far as these two teams are concerned. Moving on to Sunday, nationally televised. This will be on FS1, possibly a playoff matchup. I think two of the best teams in Major League Soccer right now, Dan, Atlanta United FC hosting the New York Red Bulls. This will be at 7 p.m. Eastern on Sunday on FS1. Dan, who you got? Why?
I'm going to go, okay, going New York Red Bulls on this one. We need a crazy result this weekend. New York, so that the Sporting Kansas City have kind of debunked the home aura of Atlanta United going out there, getting a 2-0 win, shutting them out on their home field. I really like this New York Red Bulls team. This is going to be the best matchup of the entire weekend. I am so down for this one. But New York Red Bulls have gotten the result in have gotten the result in Atlanta before, opening night of Atlanta United's history. I am going to go with the Red Bulls on this one, squeaking out a 2-1 win. They won't get the full clean sheet, but I am all aboard for this match on Sunday, which I think is easily the best match of this week's slate.
I think if there is a style of play that teams haven't been willing to use to try and get a result against Atlanta, it would be what the New York Red Bulls are doing. You know, don't give them any space between the lines, so to speak. Definitely high press them and make them earn it building out of the back. And I think there's so many teams who just look at, you know, the results last year, the results early this season, where Atlanta comes in and they just school fools and win 5-0 and it's an absolute blowout. So they think, okay, we really defensive. We'll try and nick something on the counter on a set piece and we'll hope for a 1-1 draw. We're probably going to lose by multiple goals. And, you know, it's kind of almost the Herb Brooks, 1980s U.S. Versus Russia approach, where why don't you, instead of playing defensive and assuming the team's the better team, go in there with confidence and try and make them play your style of play rather than just letting them have the ball. I think the Red Bulls will try and get something out of this. I think I'm looking at probably a crazy 2-2 draw, you know, a because MLS absolutely crazy bonkers one, similar to what we saw from the other New York team heading down to Mercedes-Benz Arena earlier. But I think we'll end up with a 2-2 draw and a fair one. And I think the Red Bulls will at this point have proved a blueprint stylistically and tactically of how you should approach Atlanta when playing them on the road, and you don't have a hope to get the win ultimately. Last game that we have here, folks, Dan, we are dubbing this the Toilet Bowl Derby. San Jose Earthquakes hosting DC United, 10:30 p.m. Eastern on Saturday. This will be on ESPN Plus, and then I'm not sure about the various Washington and San Jose TV options there. Dan, who you got in this battle of yellow cards and corners that are completely off the mark?
Oh, I am going with the Earthquakes. It's home team. DC United are going to be kicking off at 10:30 mentally. That sucks. And for a Benny Ball team, that's not really fun to deal with. They've been boring, lazy, uninventive, for the most part. This is an Earthquakes team that will let up goals. And I know they're coming off of a back-to-back, but Vancouver to San Jose is nothing in terms of travel. It's about, you're lucky if that's the 3-hour flight. So I'm down with this one for the Earthquakes. They're home. DC United have been miserable, all season long. I'll say the Quakes go and get a, I'll go with a 3-1 win for the Earthquakes. I think DC United will pinch a lone attack that will somehow befuddle the Quakes back line in its current miserable state. The Earthquakes definitely got to get the win in this one. And I think they've played really well recently. They'll get it one. And I think Wando gets another goal and takes a step forward towards the all-time record. Hashtag Wando watch.
Are we really? I don't mind it being Wanda Watcher and having a check in, but I figure shouldn't it be? I feel like we should be waiting until it's like it could actually happen. You know, it's not like Wando's going to go out there and score like 8 goals in one game. I feel like if we're like 5 or under, we can have Wanda Watch. I'm not opposed to it happening. I'm not opposed to the name or it being a hashtag, so to speak. I just think, you know, like, the distance right now, you could say that that's going to take an entire season. I don't know that we should be having bated breath right now until Wando's, you know, at least put a couple others in. But you want to be on Wando Watch, that's totally fine. You do you, Dan. I'm not going to judge. But if this was – if the Quakes had not had a midweek game, I would be expecting almost a Quakes-Minnesota – like last weekend blowout in terms of dominating performance, both, you know, in performance and on the scoreline. I agree with you, Dan, other than the Quakes having to play a midweek game, I think all of this is set up to get a Quakes win. DC, you know, their internal clocks are not going to be there. I've not been impressed with DC United as much. And, you know, even though the Quakes, you know, had to take a round trip flight to Vancouver, that is nothing compared to going DC to San Jose. That's about as long of a flight that you can have in Major League Soccer. So I think this is set up for the Quakes to get a result. I think it's the only reason it's going to be close is because they'll have some tired legs having played on turf in the midweek. So I think it's going to be a 1-0 result. But in performance, you know, in shots, X goals, all of the other metrics, you'll say this will be a dominating performance. I don't think DC United's figured it out. I don't think they're close to figuring it out. And I think the last couple results, as you said earlier on in the show, have the Quakes playing at least a better sense of soccer and have them moving in a positive direction. I don't think, other than, you know, DC United not being totally terrible against RSL down a man, that they've shown anything in the last couple of games that shows me anything. At the very least, the Quakes have some ideas in the attack and they're starting to figure things out and not be totally terrible defensively. For those reasons, I think the Quakes are on the up, and given all the other environmental factors that they have going in their favor, I think they will get a win in this game against DC United. That does it for us, folks. Dan, time for last words. Any last words? Where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at SperryDaniel94. Last words, man. Goodness. I mean, we're headed into a really big stretch of the soccer. I know the schools out here only have a week left if you're in regular school. Although I don't know if any high schoolers listen to us, but if you do, get through finals week. College students are out. It's officially getting close to summer. We're getting closer and closer to June, which means big time in terms of it's the summer of soccer. We're going to have the World Cup. We're going to have some national team friendlies. We've got MLS play going on. We've got this weekend, we think we've got the FA Cup final between Manchester United and Chelsea. And I believe the weekend after that is the Champions League final.
If 26th of May. Yes, the 26th. Champions League final.
So, we've got a lot of great stuff coming up. I am quite excited for it. You know, it's time to get buckled down, get your subscriptions in order, folks. We've got a good summer of soccer coming up. And be sure to get out to MLS games, if you can, or your local USL, NWSL, NPSL, all the N's and L's and S's and L's, all that kind of stuff, all those leagues. If you go get out to your local team, take your kids, take your wife, take a friend, take someone who doesn't know soccer, especially the World Cup. Find the bar that's going to be open at 9 a.m. with bottomless mimosas or something like that. That was a way that I got some really good friends of mine into soccer who previously laughed at me every time I said I was going to go play soccer with friends or was going out to a soccer game. All of a sudden, they're a season ticket holder now. So, you know, go to the world, go get out, get them to these events that are coming up this summer and in the coming months. This is where we grow the game in our country. And just because the men's national team isn't out or isn't a part of it, doesn't mean that there's still not some great things to see, great memories to be had, and some great experiences and chances to grow the game within the country. So go for it. I would encourage it and push it. You know, this is a big time and a big time this summer for us as soccer fans to help share our love for the game with those who just haven't come around on it yet.
Completely agree with you there, Dan. I'm going to echo your thoughts on just so much soccer coming up. You didn't mention it, but earlier this week we had the second round proper the second round proper for the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup that I thought was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, we're getting into the third round proper in which MLS teams are going to be in it. So a bunch of really good USL teams that are in it and a bunch of amateur teams that are in it. I'm really excited to see what happens with that, Dan. And that's going to be some great midweek action if you literally just want to watch, you know, wall-to-wall soccer between U.S. Open Cup, all the various friendlies for the World Cup. You know, there's going to be footy on potentially every single night of a week in a couple of weeks. And that's going to be absolutely fantastic for me. You mentioned the Champions League final, Dan. You know, I've been a little bit of a full fanboy The past couple weeks that I mentioned on the show. Also on the day of the Champions League final, they'll be having their promotion playoff final against Aston Villa. Winner take all, winner makes it into the Premier League. Really, really excited to see if Mr. Tim Ream can get back into the first division there and have Fulham, you know, a club that's had a long standing history, you know, whether it was Brian McBride or Clint Dempsey of being in the first division in England. So super excited about that. Super excited about the Open Cup, whether it's the MLS teams, the USL teams, or anybody else in the lower level. So super excited for that. Super excited for the World Cup, even without the United States playing with it. And I'd echo all your points of, you know, this is the time to get excited about it, you know, catch footy fever, and, you know, any of your friends who are maybe on the fence, you know, this is where we go about converting them, you know, with the various levels of insanity and all the action. You know, there's something out there for everybody, whether it's local, whether it's on TV, find it, get people excited about it. Listeners, you can follow me on Twitter at LWS Matt Pollard. Follow our site, lastwordonsoccer.com, across all social media platforms at LastWordSC. You can subscribe to Last Word Soccer Club Radio anywhere you find your podcast. Just search for Last Word on Sports Radio. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves, the official scarf supplier of Major League Soccer, the United Soccer League, and U.S. Soccer in general. Get your custom scarves for your group, your team, or just yourself at roughneckscarves.com. That does it for us this weekend. We'll be back next week with a whole bunch of other action, talking MLS, USL, and many, many other things. We'll see you then.